In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and my delinquent, my scruffy nerf herder of a person who would be in a place of scum and villainy. The one, the only.
You've been hit by, you've been struck by a smooth criminal.
Travis Ratz and I bringing you the podcast where we talk graphic novels and trades. It is a comic book club, and it's like Oprah, but it's comic books. And you're here with us after years of doing this show, Travis. There is a constant for you and I. It wasn't there in episode one. It wasn't there in episode two, but at some point in the history of this podcast,
in the first decade of the podcast, along the way,
you and I have built a relationship with Sean Brubaker, or I'm sorry, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, and their work, their seminal work. You and I are suckers for whenever they put something out, and their newest dive into noir, because Travis, my friend, we've left spooky season behind, and we are in Noir November.
Should we develop like a cute little name? You know how it's like Bennifer and stuff like that.
Should we Frubaker?
Frubaker. I like that. Frubaker, yeah. Or Shoebaker. If you extend Sean, those vowel sounds out.
Frubaker. Let's see. You could Baker. Brew lips. I think Frubaker is better.
I kind of like Brew Lips.
Tiptoe through the Brew Lips.
Now I can remember it. Thank you for that.
No problem.
That device.
So welcome to the show. Travis Ratz and I cannot. We are spooky season was great. Don't get us wrong. We love reading the spooky books in October. And this year's spooky endeavor had some anthologies, some light little like tapas, if you will.
We had
some tapas of just little spooky stories, but now we're hitting our one of our most favorite creative teams of the show, Brubaker and Phillips, as we've dubbed them,
Brulips. The of that bad boy.
And we've decided that this November we're just gonna embrace what we love, and we're gonna do some noir. We love some crime books on this show, so that's what we got going on. This episode today, Travis and I, Brubaker and Phillips, put out a standalone criminal story called The Knives. And it is kind of a culmination of the 10 volumes or 10, I guess volumes are the right word, like trades of Criminal that come before.
Story arcs.
It weaves different pieces of them together. And so in that spirit, we've also read the very first volume of Criminal entitled Coward. So this book, Travis, for you and I, we haven't done Criminal proper on the show before. No. We've done the sort of, I guess what you would call Criminal, like the tail end. After he did that main run, they kind of dipped their toe in it. So we did Cruel Summer. All My Heroes Are Junkies.
Was that a Criminal book though?
I believe it's a taste of Criminal, I think.
Dude, I gotta go back and read that, because
I know
we were kind of lukewarm on that, and maybe it's because we didn't have the story arcs of Criminal
Born
in that world. It did feel, I think we both said, like, it feels like you just kind of like are dropped into the story, and it felt like it was open-ended.
So
maybe that makes sense.
So it would be my heroes have always been junkies would be volume 8. We've done Cruel Summer, which would be volume 10. And I don't remember if we did Bad Weekend, the one with the comic book.
I have it.
I don't think we did it for the show, no. But I know that I've read it. So I've read 8, 9, and 10 just because they were not really booked out as criminal books, right?
No.
Bad Weekend came out as criminal, but they did it was only like 2 issues of criminal.
I don't even remember all my heroes were junkies, but do you think that goes back and flashes back on the old guy in here who is the junkie?
I don't know. I don't remember. So I do agree with you. That would be the one where you and I were like, I don't know. I mean, we've read the Reckless series. We've read other parts that are not in criminal. We read the Fade Out. We read Kill or Be Killed.
Pulp is not.
We read Pulp. We read Where the Body Was. We've read all. What's the house? Where the Houses of the Unholy. If they've put it out, we've read it. Except we were kind of late to the criminal game.
And we had read it kind of on our own. Like I'd read the first 2 big trades of it.
I had never
4 or 5 when I was in Guam, but. It was one of those things where we were kind of off of noir, and so we just didn't talk about it.
And I never read it because it was one of those things where I want to read Fatale, right? I want to read their Fatale run, but it seemed like one of those things like, oh, I got to go back and I got to read all of these volumes, right? And Brubaker and Phillips just kept putting out stuff that I didn't need to go back and read Criminal, right? But I feel like I'm saying it now. I'm spoiling the comic book Christmas Club episode, but I think those collected big volumes of Criminal are in my future. Like I want to go back and read it after reading this. So let's dive into this story.
You said something on there. I think one of the reasons like I didn't read it for a long time, because even I read it like 5 or 6 years after we were like, getting into a Brubaker. But it was, it's kind of like, I never watched The Wire, right? And everyone's like, you got to watch The Wire. It's like the best show on television. But I've watched so much that came after The Wire. I'm kind of like, well, if I go back to The Wire, because so much has
based on that, right?
It's from The Wire. Am I going to get the full effect of it? Or is it just going to feel dated? And that's kind of for a while how I felt about Criminal. And in some ways, that argument stands.
And that's the conversation. That's why we're here today, right? So what we're doing is we're comparing the newest volume of this, The Knives, which came out. It's a criminal book, but it came out as a graphic novel, all in one thing, and book 1, right? So it's kind of a retrospective, if you will. We've got the new, and we're going to look at the very first volume of it. So let's talk, Travis. I want to ask you, we went back, you had already read volume 1. I had never read it before. You went back to it to go check it out. Having read all of the Brubaker we read, let's just start with Criminal volume 1. Before we get into the newest one, let's talk Criminal volume 1. What did you enjoy? What have you seen change since this one? What are you feeling as you go back and look at it?
Well, when you read Criminal Book Volume 1, it kind of is like this, it's kind of centered around this heist, and we kind of enter this world through this character named Leo.
Yeah.
And he's kind of very noir trope. He's a criminal, but he's trying to like not be a criminal, but like guilt pulls him back into this criminal world, right? So for this big heist of all heists, they're going to steal some blood diamonds, but it turns out that what they steal isn't blood diamonds. It's a bunch of heroin, and they get involved with the big crime boss, Sebastian Hyde, who is the big kind of crime boss throughout all the criminal books. But since this is the first book you're reading, you don't know that. You don't know until you read volume 2, where it becomes like Pulp Fiction, where it's like, oh, the boxer he passed on his way into that bar is actually his own thing on there. So it's really interesting going into this first I'm kind of curious where you stand on this, because in my reread, I'd already realized, oh yeah, these characters come in and out of the story. So it was more about me being like, do I remember this character? Oh yeah, he comes up later. Oh, he has a son. Oh, he has a daughter. So opening up this world, it does feel like a straight up kind of standalone crime story.
Right, it does, but it gives you hints that there's something else under the surface, right? Like we meet
lots of characters.
We meet Lawless, right? At the end of you kind of hear a little bit about Lawless and kind of hear about his
Teague Lawless, the outlaw,
right? And then that Lawless name comes back in the newest book we read.
Yeah, Tracy Lawless. It's also in the second volume. He's the center of the second.
So I went into this going, I know that this is connected to a bunch of stuff. So I was part of the other reason I didn't read Criminal is because I was like, okay, it's a connected series. Do I want it? Am I going to read this connected series all the way through when Brubaker and Phillips just, I'm loving what they're doing with Reckless, right? They're five books of Reckless that I read, right? Ooh, I really like being able to them just give me this one and done story like Night Fever. Night Do Fever. I really want to go back and commit to, seven volumes of reading this stuff? But I really enjoyed that. You can feel that this is bigger than just volume one, but it really does stand alone, right? It really does kind of to sit in itself. And I the thing that I liked about it is that piece of it, right? I wasn't like, oh man, I got to read volume two right now because I don't have the story. I enjoyed being able to read volume one. Now I want to read volume two because I want to see the interconnectedness, because as reading the last volume, which would be 11 Knives, and having read Bad Weekend, which is all about the artist and the knives, right? Yeah. It's his story before then. I was like, okay, I want the interconnected Pulp Fiction-y world of this, right? So I'm interested in that piece of it.
And his dad is a counterfeiter in these early volumes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And what I liked about it, maybe we kind of maybe start here since we're kicking off Noir November, is what are some of the noir tropes that we see throughout Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' work, but especially in Criminal that you've gravitated to, or that you just like, yum, 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 yum.
I think Brubaker does a really good job of the narrator. Right. Of the main character giving his piece. Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel hokey. I think that's it's noir, but it's not like the night was dark and the dame walked in. Right. Like it doesn't have that, but it is that trope that noir has of the narrator telling you what's going on and how they're feeling. It's not as hokey and as poetic. Right. But that trope does really well. And I also like these sort of like, he does this a lot, a character who is in it, but gets over their head. I feel like that's always a part of what we read for him is like, okay, this is a capable person they're, it's every time the character gets sucked into something bigger than them.
A specialist.
Yes.
Of some kind.
Or they get sucked into this thing. And so I think it also pays because it's noir, but it's not a detective, right?
Right.
It's not that detective story. It's a crime story. And it's not the person trying to solve the crime. It is you're following this criminal, right?
Yeah.
Or the lives of criminals. I find that interesting. I think it flips the hokiness. You're not following the detective, the beat cop trying to figure it out, or the private eye. But you're following this character who is capable, but somehow gets in over their head and has to find their way out. I think that there's always stakes. I really like that there's stakes and like people die and you're like, oh man, I can't believe like that character. Whoa, my, you know what I mean? Like those things happen. He's not afraid to kill characters. And this is like a testament to everything after this feels more intricate and more, he's more comfortable taking side steps in his books as they go on, right? But this is a tight story. It's a tight story, and it was I really enjoyed it.
In the world, in a series called Criminals, where, you know, you're just dealing with a bunch of criminals, you know there's going to be a lot of death. But what's nice about it is because once you realize they're all interconnected and he can jump back and forth through time, just because the character is dead doesn't mean you're not going to get like another five issues where they're the star.
Right.
And that's kind of cool. So like, you're like, oh, Ricky Lawless, he's, you know, mentioned in one of them that he's killed off on there, and then we get his little arc later as you read more. And so there's a sense of, hey, if you like one of these little side characters or that bit, you know, that could become its own story at some point,
right?
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I really do like this idea, and it's not the mob, right? I think that that's the trap you can fall in when you're trying to do interconnected stories, right? You go like, they're all part of the same family, right? It's like, you know, like, you could go like, oh, they're all mobsters in this, you know, you're doing the Godfather thing, right? But instead of
Sopranos,
right? Instead of that, you get to play with people who like are connected to that world, but maybe not totally connected. They're like, he feels outside of this crime family.
Yeah. Right.
But he gets sucked in, and we don't know about, and I really do. I think he does a really good job of fleshing out characters, even in this first volume. I mean, Brubaker was a talented writer, wrote lots of stuff before this comes out. So I'm not saying like, oh, he's real green when he writes this. But you can see his storytelling improve over time.
Yeah. Can I point out when you had mentioned it earlier, and this is, I was going to save it for later when we talked about the same on here. And I do notice a difference, but throughout these first volumes of criminal books, like you said, like it does have that noir narration, but I don't feel like the arthurial voice, even though it's coming from the characters, changes much depending on which character is doing the narration, whether it's a female character, whether it's a teenage character, whether it's an old man character. It is Brubaker's arthurial noir voice to it.
Yeah.
And I think that changes a little bit lately, like Reckless is similar, but slightly different. It fits more his character. And even in the newer volume, I'm going to make an argument that there's some slighter differences. He's taken on that. He's able to vary up his narration a little bit more as he has evolved than to just having that standard, his style of noir narration.
Yeah. And that's not to say he's not poetic, right? Because this is the noir at the end of this volume. There's a siren in the distance, like a song calling me home. I think of Greta, how she'll never hear that call again. But this song is getting louder, starting to scream it. But this song is getting louder, starting to scream at me. I can't be here when that song stops. I can't be here. But like I said, dying is harder than killing. Just my luck, right? Like
Hey, Frank Miller, settle down.
but it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not that.
It's not hyperbolized like that.
Right. It's not.
The streets are covered with rats and vermin as I sit in the filth and squalor.
This isn't a mud pit. It's an operating table, right?
Yeah.
Which
is good too. Which is good too.
But this feels, it feels grounded in a way, even though it's, you know, it's kind of, it's not, but it's a tight story. I think that's the thing I really appreciated about this is jumping into volume one. I was like, okay, if I read this and we talk about it, am I going to have to like read number two, volume two right away to get what's going on? And you don't. This opens a chapter, closes a chapter. There are some loose ends, right? There are some names mentioned, but this is an in and out crime book that he does really well. I think if we could talk about one thing that has improved vastly, and maybe vastly isn't the right word, but and I wonder if it's the colorist more than anything else, but Sean Phillips' art has grown a lot between these two volumes, right? Between volume one and volume 11, The Knives, there is a lot of growth, but it's also colored by someone different. This one is colored by, and I didn't say his name at the beginning, so I apologize for that. But this was colored by, why can't I get his name? Val Staples. So Val Staples colors this one. It feels a little
Do you think I know he draws digitally, but now, do you think he was drawing digitally with this? Yeah, it looks like it, kind of.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, you know how, like, brushes have gotten so much, yeah. I mean, like, the way digital art works has gotten so much better from when this was published in, I don't know, the originally published in, what, 20, I don't know, 2000 something.
This thing was 2021, the big hardcover.
I bought this one in 20. I bought the newest single volume reprint in it. Let's see. Oh, here we go. 2006 to 2007 is when Criminal was published. Oh, yeah,
that's a big.
So that's 20 years. That's almost 20 years ago, right? So the way we do digital inks, the way we do digital coloring has changed, and so just the tools have changed. But I think that his style has gotten. I think his style's gotten better too. I mean, it's still this, you can tell that it's him, but I think his facial acting has gotten better. I think he uses less heavy lines. I mean, he uses big blocky shadow, but I think his inks around faces are lighter than they were in this volume one. So volume one, interesting, awesome, had fun with it. Now I
say one more thing about volume one and the world of Criminal. I really like the set pieces, and they start to build this world. The Undertown or the Undertow bar is really cool, and that always comes up there with Gnarly the bartender. It comes up in the book we're going to talk about. The docks or like the cabin house. The more Criminal you read, I think it's just like this fictional city in California, even though they talk about real cities and places in the world.
Yeah.
It starts to feel kind of like Sin City, you know, where it's like the more you read, you're like, oh, we're back at the docks. I haven't been here since volume one. Or like, it's not a criminal book unless we have a scene in the Undertow, right? And I really like that. It starts to feel connected.
Yeah, and you can tell, having read volume one and, you know, having read the end of it, right, I'm missing like, six volumes in between. I know why they're making a TV show, right? You can feel like, oh, we get to have characters come in and out. We get to give you a taste of somebody. And next season, we get to play with their story. It's still in the same world. You'll still see characters pop up, but we get to like tell you this anthology tale of crime that has this interconnected nature, right? Like, Pulp Fiction's one film that has all these interconnected parts, but this gets to have a wider interconnected nature, right? So let's talk the newest volume, The Knives. So Brubaker and Phillips have been putting out more standalone graphic novels, right? As opposed to doing single issue work, they've been doing, let's do a standalone. Let's put this out. Let's do that out, right? And I was interested to see like, okay, instead of doing Criminal in issues again, let's bring Criminal back and let's just do a volume of Criminal, right? They did that with Cruel Summer, but Cruel Summer was not originally labeled Criminal. Cruel Summer was not originally labeled a Criminal book, but now it has been tied into that. My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies was not titled a Criminal book, but now as they're kind of like rebranding, and I think it's all part of the TV show coming out, they're like, yeah, it's in the same
also world. I wonder if it's like, I don't know how well those books sold as compared to others.
Yeah.
And now if you're just getting into Criminal and you're a completionist, it's a smart way to get people to like, well, technically it's part of it. You know,
yeah.
It's like when you do Stranger Things in season two, like, or episode six, you're like, why is she like a superhero? Whatever.
Yeah.
It's part of it. I got to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think like jumping into this one, right. I'm missing stuff that you might not be missing. Right. I'm missing stuff because this book essentially acts as a way to check in on several characters that we've seen along the way, right? It puts a bow on some stories. It ends a chapter, starts a chapter, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting, like, it doesn't feel like a montage, right? Because there is a very set story that's happening. But I do love, there's a couple times where it's like tangent one and it goes off and it's like end of tangent. And then it goes somewhere else and it's like end of tangent. All right, let's get back to the story. I know that I'm missing some things, but that didn't detract from the story, right?
To be honest, having just reread the first five story arcs.
Yeah.
And the first one, if you read the first criminal, you're getting 90% of this book. It's got the young girl from the first volume. It's they go visit Leo briefly in prison from the first volume. You have the son of the counterfeiter. Like he says, I look like my dad. And if you look in the first volume, he looks like the counterfeiter, you know, who helps him get his documents. Maybe that was the first volume. Maybe it was volume. No, that's volume two. Sorry. Three. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. And so but you do get a lot of it. So it also almost acts as like not a reset, but like if you only read Criminal Volume 1, like it was smart not to pull so deep into the criminal arcs, you know.
Yeah.
He's not pulling necessarily from like Volume 5 or Volume 6 a lot, because even if you like Criminal, you might have just dropped off it at some point, but you wanted to check it out because you walked in your comic book store and you're like, oh, the new Ed Brubaker book on here.
This does. So Jacob Kurtz is the main character in this, right? A cartoonist who goes to Hollywood because his show is being turned, his comic is being turned into
Kafka something.
Frank Kafka. Frank Kafka PI or Detective Frank Kafka is being turned into a TV show, which is funny. It's a little meta, right? Because Brubaker
talks about that in the back of the book.
Right. Because Brubaker is, you know, going, having his show. He was a main part of that, the team for the TV show, right? Like he's brought in heavily on the TV show. And Jacob Kurtz also is the character in Bad Weekend, right? So he has the Angie is staying with him. Angie's reading all these like old comics, right? These old pages from comics. He's got all of this stuff. That's all the old guy that he's helping out in Bad Weekend, right?
Yeah.
And so it is this sort of like, okay, here's this character. Let's spend a little more time with him in this. Let's see how he gets wrapped up.
Crane, I think something I want to say. Yeah.
Yeah. It also gets you kind of, it lets him kind of talk about Hollywood. It lets him talk about like what it's like to be a writer and let your darlings go and let someone else mess with
him. Well, he did that. They did that big Hollywood book, you know, that was set in like old time in Hollywood. But in the back of this volume, he talks about not this was just kind of therapy for when, you know, just coming out of Hollywood himself, like kind of getting lost in the sauce and kind of finding himself talking like an insider and being like, what am I doing here? You know, and people taking his ideas. And then the actual crime part of this is actually from Brubaker's true life too, because his aunt or like his aunt, she didn't get kidnapped, but she got taken advantage of after her husband died and like the property he owned and the work he owned by one of the caretakers.
Yeah.
And he just felt so victimized and so angry from it that he is like, well, let me kind of, can I take that feeling and that kind of plot and turn it into a true crime, like a crime story with twists and turns. And so, I love how Brubaker pulls a lot from his personal life and puts it into his books, and then is very transparent when he does it. I really like just listening to Brubaker interviews. He is very open about storytelling, the good and the bad of it. But what did you think between, because you read these kind of like around the same time period, did one jump out at you? Like, what would you be more excited to do? Continue the story from the knives and see what happens in the more contemporary criminal world, or to continue from the original criminal?
I think the knives makes me want to fill in those gaps, right? Okay. So I think it, you know, Brubaker in the back talked to me, you just mentioned this, but he talks about how like this was a way to bring the criminal story up to modern time, to jump it up to now. Right. And so he's able to do that with this book. He's able to, you know, bring the timeline forward to where we would be now with all of these people. So it makes me want to go back and read what I'm missing. Now, the end of this with, Tracy being like, hey, I work for you now. If you need me to figure something out, that's it. And I'm like, okay, tell me that story. I'm in. I want to see that one. Right. So I think that that was really cool. And I would tell you, like, when I read this one, so I read volume one, then I read this because this one came out in, I think, in September. So I bought volume one, I read volume one, then I read this, and then I was like, ooh, I'm going to go read Bad Weekend. So I went back and read Bad Weekend to kind of wrap in, like, okay, fill in the blanks about this comic artist.
Old cartoonist, so,
The old cartoonist and this in Jacob, and see how that story plays into everything. So it was a really fun trifecta of reading that isn't super tight together, but has, you know, Bad Weekend probably is the closest tie, but even that is
you basically curated your own criminal run.
Right. By like just jumping from these pieces. So there were bits of it where I love Brubaker and Phillips, but there were bits of this where I went like, this would probably hit better had I read all of Criminal. Right.
Sure. Especially the Tracy stuff, because he comes in volume two and very different character than he is in this modern one.
So I go like, okay, that I think I would have enjoyed. I mean, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. It's Brubaker and Phillips. I really did like it. But I think I'm like, oh, I'm missing it. So I'm telling you, like, for me, I want to go back and read those, and then I'll probably read this again to put a bow on it in my mind. You know
what, the way you approach reading this reminds me so much of how you find music, right? You hear a band and then you're like, all right, what on the cover? You're like, this guy's got this t-shirt of this band on his cover. What's Gorilla Biscuits? And you listen to Gorilla Biscuits. And then you're like, okay, well, they mentioned this, which is also, so let me go listen to this thing.
Yeah.
You know, so you have kind of like your line and you just start filling in those gaps and your world just gets, you know, richer and richer.
Yeah. And I think he's created, I think, you know, Brubaker and Phillips have created this world where you can tell all of these stories and they are good one off, right? I read Bad Weekend back when it came out with no context to anything, but I was like, oh, that's great. I really like that. You know, it's like, it was two oversized issues in Criminal that they're like, let's make it a hardcover. Right. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed The Knives. I really enjoyed volume one, but now there's that part of me that goes like, okay, I've tasted it. Now I need the whole meal, right? I need to like fill in that piece that I'm missing.
But you could, the beautiful thing about Criminal too, is you can do it slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's it's not like you don't have to rush to catch the next book. Like sometimes in Reckless, you're like, oh, they're coming out. Got to read it in order on here. You know, this, because it already exists, you can kind of go in and go out, because these volumes, man, like if you get put them on your list, they're big. There's three of these suckers.
Yeah.
You know, and they take time to get through.
Right. And there are now not only are they doing those big ones, but they are releasing all of them again in the smaller paperback. So you can get them in the smaller paperback. So you're reading one volume at a time. And I'm kind of like, ooh, do I want to do that? Do I just want to get 1 through 7? I already have 7. I already have 1, right? Do I want to get 2 through 7 in these little pieces and just like snack on them? Like, oh,
yeah,
I'm going to read this one this week. And then a couple weeks later go, I'm going to read volume 3 now, right?
What's the price on one of those?
This one was $9.99. I think that's their volume 1 Let's Get You. I think the others are 14 50. Or something like that.
This was 50 on the back.
Yeah.
On there. So yeah, it's probably about going to be around the same price.
Yeah.
No, maybe the hardcover is a little bit more, like 150, you know, to get all of them.
Yeah. So there's part of me that goes like, okay, I'm in now, right? Like this was a part of my Brubaker, thing that I didn't have, right? We've read almost everything. I think I've read every other book that they put out. I've even read.
They got the early stuff before Criminal that they would do together.
I still want to read Fatale, right? I've even read his other little tiny noir series. That's kind of like it feels Hardy Boys, not Hardy. What's the
Boxcar Kids?
Yeah, I mean it's that sort of like it's if they were adults, right? So this basically is this girl comes back home. It's called Friday. This girl comes back home and meets up with like her best friend that they used to solve crimes together, right?
Oh, okay.
And he's wrapped up in this whole thing and she gets pulled into it. So it's very like, let's age up the Hardy Boys or
Nancy Drew
and play in this thing. But it's Brubaker and I love Brubaker. So like, no matter what he puts out, I want to read it. And so I want to go back and I'm like, okay, that's just what I need to do. I need to go ahead and finish this. I need to get Fatale and just, I have a shelf. I have my Brubaker shelf. I might as well chuck it full of stuff. You know what I mean? So
I mean, is it a Brubaker shelf or is a Brulip shelf?
It's a Brulip shelves. Okay. It's a Brulip shelf. But I, you know, there's a
maybe I can't move offices. What am I going to do with my Brulip shelf?
Yeah, what am I going to do with my Brulips? It's just really good. And let's talk about some art.
Talking about noir in general and then what aspects of noir do we want to discover this? Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
So the coloring. Now that Jacob Phillips has started doing the coloring in the last couple books that these guys have done, it really does. It is this, it's less dark. The coloring in the first volume of Criminal is dark and kind of coffee colored or like muted. I don't like color. And this has got this wash of like pastel-y weirdness. And when it's dark, it's not black. When it's dark, it's like purple. When it's night, it's like teal, or this weird green. And I think that sets the mood in a different way, right?
The
dark scenes in here, they feel noir, but they feel neon. I don't know how else to put it, right? It's like muted neon colors. And I think Jacob Phillips does a really good job of coloring his dad's work. Like, you know, like there's a symbiotic piece that I think the three of them now have going on, right? That they're just very good at. You know,
like the skin tones even are much more the character. It's easier. I mean, in the Criminal, the volume one, sometimes you're like, wait, is this the same guy? Is this different? You know, and it's much easier to tell these characters apart sometimes just by just their skin tone. You know, like the old lady, she's pale. The Hollywood guy is tan. And then, you know, it's just really, yeah, the shading is the color shades. And like, yeah, like you're seeing the neon, like you mentioned, with the lights and the colors of the shadows. It does feel very, you see that, like, did he do Cruel Summer too?
Yeah.
Cruel Summer feels very neon to me.
I don't know if Jacob did the color on that, but the last couple books he's done with them. I mean, I like the Hollywood. I like that. We've talked about this before with Reckless, like the places they're at feel just as important. Right. So like his aunt's house, like the detail that's in
the garden, right? Like the couple of lots that she's on. It's just the plants are all local to California. I want to talk about something with Phillips.
Yeah.
Is, you know, when we talk about someone like Mike Mignola, Mignola. I always want to call him like Steel Magnolias. is he does so much great creative stuff with panels and perspective. Sean Phillips is I mean, there's a couple of, like, we think of the panel as the camera. It's pretty much straight on for a lot of it. He doesn't do a lot of flashy stuff with panel breakdowns or perspective as far as where we're viewing the scene from.
There's no canted angles or anything weird like that, right?
No. Maybe there'll be like an upshot or a downshot, you know, to establish a scene. But all the dialogue, it's a lot of close-ups because, you know, his facial expressions are some of the best in the biz with, you know, with the few lines he puts in them. But, you know, I probably wouldn't have noticed it if we hadn't read some of the spooky books that we did where they were just doing really creative stuff with panels and then going and just reading this right after. It's like watching like a Kevin Smith movie, like, oh, that camera's not going to move.
No. Like, but he does but it's still... I think because his art is so good and because he's establishing the scenes behind it, right? Like, and the coloring really helps too, right? Like, ooh, that's hospital color background. Like they're in the hospital and everything's tinged that hospital color, right?
He's like, all about the content of the panel and not like how we're showing you that content. He's just like, no, you pay me to draw settings and people, and that's what I'm going to give you.
Right.
I'm going to be the best at
it. I'm not going to try to be flashy. It's just going to look like a movie, right?
Yeah.
The apartment that Jacob lives in, right, is great. It is every single like Hollywood apartment you've seen in a movie. It's like the two floors. It's the terrace. It looks like
it's got a movie room. You know what? I think I'm going to be aging into Jacob. With minus the cartoonist talent. I got a movie room where I watch old cult movies in there. Like, do you want to hang out? No, I've kind of created myself a creative world here.
A little room here. I was like a reel that came up on Instagram. That's how you know I'm in my 40s and not younger, is because I watch reels and not TikTok. But there was a reel of this guy who had, do you remember the old projector TVs that had the yellow, that had the primary color projectors? So instead of it being... You know how you could, like, as teachers, we had those projectors in our room that project your board. Well, they used to, before then, they had this giant television that was a screen, like a 50-inch screen. And you'd flip down the little projector and it would point up at this screen. So, and it's all paneled in wood. It's very like early 90s. And it would play those, not laser discs, but the other version of laser discs. Like, it looked like a giant floppy disk that was a movie was on it. Okay. And that was
I don't notice at all.
That was your TV. And that reminds me of like, oh, I wish I was like, you want that room where like it's hard to watch something, right? Like,
he talks about blue light. He goes, I'm projecting it on here. There's no blue light. This isn't a big screen TV.
Right. So there's this piece where I enjoy the idea of like, it's hard. It's a chore to watch something, right? Like that's why records are great, right? You got to open. It's the ritual of it, right? Yeah. I think that's why I love a comic book like this. It's a ritual of like, I got to open it. I got to, you know, like there's something about the pages and feeling it needing to be in the light to see it right. And I, you're right. I'd like to age into, I want to get a CRT TV in my office with a VHS so I can watch old VHS of like, old VHSs of Star Wars in my office.
Yeah, or play, those things are getting expensive. Those VHS
go buy an old Nintendo and just play Nintendo, like a real Nintendo. Have to blow in the cartridge, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about this summer. Where like, if we're gonna go like the VHS collection, you have to make it very specific.
Oh
like,
yeah.
I'm only getting like hard to find 80s schlock horror.
Yeah.
Or I'm only getting, you know, kids movies that I watch and that, you know, like it has to be a very specific collection.
Yeah. You can't open
it up to everything.
Yeah. No, you have to like get your niche, right? You have to have your niche film collection that you want to watch.
Because then it doesn't become just like an old piece of technology. It becomes like a curated collection in this format.
Right. So I think like the story in this was great. I love the Hollywood piece of it. I love like the peek behind the curtain of Hollywood. I love the it is a meandering plot, this story. You do not know where it's going at first. You're like, okay, he's making this TV show. All right, he's got an aunt. And it doesn't come back to that aunt until way later.
Yeah.
And then it's not connected to the other part of the story.
Angie.
But it all works
It's not my favorite criminal because the connections aren't as clever as some of the other ones, you know, on there. But it might be my favorite, one of my favorites to look at.
It is gorgeous. It's great.
Yeah.
The Kafka stuff is funny. The idea, it's this indie comic, a very underground indie comic is going to be made into a TV show.
I like the character of Jacob. I like him as far as he's probably one of my top tier criminal characters that I've read so far. And I don't think I've ever read. I still have the whole middle section of Criminal that I haven't read. So I got to dive back into it too.
I like that he goes from I froze. I couldn't help who I needed to help. And then at the end of the book, he's like, I'm not freezing, but then he gets stabbed. it just goes totally wrong the way he wants it. So let's wrap up our conversation with a little bit of a noir flavoring, Travis, because this is Noir November. This is act three of our episode today. So let's talk a little bit about what we're doing this November. This is kitschy. This is normally what we would do over the summer.
Yeah, right? Josh has been in a real let's theme out these months.
Type. I have. We've been doing this show for a while, and you kind of go
keep it fresh. Yeah,
what can we do to do different? So
is nice reading things together. So for comparison purposes,
So we just got out of spooky season, and we did our three, four kind of spookyish books, right? And now in November, we're giving ourselves a little noir treat. And so we kicked it off with our favorite noir, which was, you know, Brubaker and Phillips doing Criminal. And then we're going to dive into dive somewhere different, Travis, because we've got two books coming up, that are just going to be interesting. We're doing a book called Gun Honey, which could not be, it is pulpy.
Sticky.
It is out on Hard Case Crime, an imprint on Titan Comics. I've read some Hard Case Crime novels. Stephen King did a couple Hard Case Crime books that I've read. The Halloween book that I read was out on the Hard Case Crime imprint. So it is.
We'll get to it on that show, but that's one of the ones we're reading.
I'm interested in how that's going to look. That seems like trashy noir. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do a book called Mugshots, which is feels very noir because it's cartoony. It's
Parker-esque.
It looks like Parker. It really has that kind of all shadows and just two colors. Right. Yeah. It feels like a black and white film that we're reading. So what are you hoping to get when we close? Or why Noir November? Why did you agree to this, Travis?
Well, one, it's they both have ends in them, Noir and November.
It works. Alliteration gets us everything.
You know, you talk about pairing a genre with the season and the coziness of it, like with spooky books make you feel cozy in October. You know, noir, you know, it means dark, it's starting to dark, you know, things are just starting to get, you know, it's not. The sun's not out as much as long anymore, like crime and kind of gray areas on there.
Yeah.
But for me, what I'm looking to find on here is because so much of the noir we've read for this podcast has been, a lot of it has been Sean Phillips and Brubaker.
Yes.
I want to see different art styles in the noir storytelling. I want to see, because when I think noir in comics, I cannot think of anything but Sean Phillips. Style.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting for me at first. It's going to be a little bit maybe uncomfortable. Being like, this isn't noir. Where's Sean Phillips? Where's the warm and dark autumn colorings on here? Or maybe I will. Maybe they'll be those elements still in there no matter the style is switched up. So I really want to see that story. I want to see the genre told through some of our different artistic styles than what we typically have been consuming.
Yeah, I think for me, I also kind of want to see, and we've read Parker before, we've read a couple other crime stories, right? But I'm interested to see how do others play with the genre, right? How are others playing in the crime world? Are we going to see a different set of tropes? Are we going to see a different set of, you know, ways that we handle the detective or the,
how do we manipulate those tropes?
Right. So I'll be interested to see how these different authors do that. Now we're just reading two other books, and I feel those two other books feel they look polar opposite. So I think that'll be interesting, yeah. Right? As we talk about art and we kind of wrap up Noir November and discuss like, okay, what's the, you know, is there something in this that does this art lend better to that art, or does it not matter what it looks like, right? Is if the story's good, do we get it? What are the pieces that we enjoy about it? So I'm looking forward to that discussion. And what there's just something about this story, this genre that doesn't get old for me. And I don't know why, right? Like
yeah.
having, this is one I come back to other authors. There's just something always appealing. And I think maybe it's because it's an easy genre to jump in, tell a story and be done with it. Right.
Well, yeah. And it has its own style that isn't dependent on the author writing it. The genre itself comes with a kind of like a cut and paste style. Now, obviously, yeah. The author approach differently, but I consume a lot of noir, but it's mostly in old pulp novels mm-hmm. and not in comic books. But sometimes those authors can feel interchangeable because it feels like, oh, the genre is working harder than the author sometimes. The
style yeah. of the author. Yeah. I think that that's kind of I think that's the same thing. Like I read a lot of like swords and sandals stuff, right? A lot of yeah. Conan stuff. And that follows a strict, this is how this story works. And sometimes authors will tweak it. They'll add humor or they'll zing up the character a little bit, but it always kind of follows these same beats. So I'll be interested to see what beats these two authors play in and how it yeah. works. Right.
So and if they can't hit some of those like necessary beats, like it's okay, but like,
yeah,
it's missing that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks. Another long episode. These are two long episodes back to back. I'm sorry, people, as you've listened to the show and you're like, they got to a tight 35 minutes. What is going on?
Josh isn't a principal anymore.
I know. I'm not a principal anymore. I can talk. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can write a review, rate it, all that good stuff on your favorite podcast app. You can find us at comicexposure.com. If you leave us a comment on the Spotify, because that's the one that we check, we will definitely share it on the show. Yeah. So that's the way to do it. Or if you're like, if you're an internet person, I think you could probably comment on the thing on the show on the website, but I don't know that either of us check that on the regular. But you could if you wanted to. Maybe we'd see it. Yes, he's giving me a finger.
I am
he's checking to see if there's anybody
any new comments.
I checked earlier in the last week. I didn't see it. We're good. All right, so folks, thanks for tuning in. We love you bunches. Thanks for hanging out with us. Enjoy some Noir November. If you want to read with us, we're doing Mugshots by Thomas Matthews and Gattani, and we're doing Gun Honey with the authors and stuff are not on the cover, of course. By
I think we also Charles, have a female guest coming on for that one, which is probably going to be important.
Charles Adey.
Keep me in check.
And Ang Ho Ken is the artist on it. I think it'll be an interesting 90s kind of that one looks 90s. It looks like a Seagal movie, but the main character is a woman, right? It feels like what can we do? We're going to have boobs in it. So it'll be something. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next trade.